From ABC News, World News, This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
So it is with regret, but with great pride for all that we have done together, that I am here this morning to end my candidacy for President of the United States of America.
The consumer's scooping up value items and is buying just those things that they need, the necessities they're selling.
I have devoted over 31 years of my life to public service, and I care for people, and I have never harmed anyone.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
What are you doing this weekend that's so important you can't test your home for radon?
Hey, what are you up to, neighbor?
I'm carving a monkey out of a peach pit.
Oh, can I help?
Radon, a deadly naturally occurring radioactive gas that seeps into homes in this area, is the second leading cause of lung cancer. Many have tested their homes, but many still haven't. They're probably just too busy.
Doing, Dad?
I'm developing a compound that, when applied to the soles of shoes, keeps gum from sticking to them.
What a wonderful gift to mankind.
Testing for radon is quick, easy, and inexpensive, and the problem is fixable. So just about anyone can take time this weekend to test.
Hon, what are you going to do today?
I'm very busy. After I rake a perfect crosshatch pattern in the pea gravel in the driveway, I'm going to change the air in the spare tire of the station wagon.
I'd better make some sandwiches.
Call 1-800-SOS-RADON for more information or test your home today. A public service from the EPA and the Ad Council.
And then there were four.
We were ready to go full throttle, but unfortunately we ran out of gas. While we have plenty of potential and plenty of enthusiasm, unfortunately we do not have plenty of money. So it is with regret, but with great pride for all that we have done together, that I am here this morning to end my candidacy for President of the United States of America.
Senator Bob Kerry of Nebraska seemed to have all the trappings of a successful candidate, a Medal of Honor winner, a successful businessman, but his campaign never seemed to hit the mark, and the voters responded in kind. His departure leaves Clinton, Tsongas, Brown, and Harkin in the quest for the Democratic nomination. Governor Clinton, who stands to benefit the most from Kerry's decision, was quick to praise the ex-candidate.
He put health care on the front burner, and every Democrat, for the first time in the history of this country, is committed to comprehensive health reform. And he also continued to be an apostle of fundamental change, of going beyond where both parties had been, not blending the approaches of both parties, but going beyond them. I think he was right about both.
Clinton had to do well in last Tuesday's Georgia primary to offset earlier losses. And when the votes were counted,
I hope you're about half as happy as I am tonight.
The Arkansas governor had reason to be. He marched through Georgia with 57% of the vote. Closest to him, Paul Tsongas, who had to do well in the Maryland primary to show he is more than a regional candidate from the Northeast.
They said that I was a regional candidate. They're right. North, south, east, and west.
Speaking of the West, Tsongas won the Utah primary, and he and Clinton were supposed to do well in Colorado, and they did, but not as well as Jerry Brown, who won Colorado in a squeaker of an upset.
It's kind of like the race between the tortoise and the hare. We're not the rabbit jumping out in front, but we're coming along very deliberately, week by week. The 800 number is bringing in the funds. People are joining, and like winter soldiers, we're going to create the second American revolution.
Whether or not that revolution will carry on will depend a lot on this coming week and the motherlode of delegates at stake in the 11 primaries and caucuses to be held. ABC's political director, Hal Bruno.
Now we're getting into the stage of the campaign where winning delegates is what really counts. And Clinton has the potential on Super Tuesday, if it goes according to the form chart, where he could pick up 600 or so delegates down here in the South. Tsongas has the prospect of picking up maybe a couple hundred delegates in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and wherever else he can, you know, a few scattered districts. So coming out of Super Tuesday, Clinton has the potential to be a tremendous front runner in terms of delegates.
The four remaining candidates held another debate in Dallas last Thursday and spent a good deal of time covering the issues For instance, Paul Tsongas got in his licks for his version of a capital gains tax, which would reward long-term investors at the expense of short-term speculators who get in for the quick buck.
I'm saying to the wealthy of this country, very simply is, you invest in America, you do very well. If you don't invest in America, you're going to get hurt. You have to give the people who have the funds the incentive not to go out and consume with yachts and this kind of thing, but to invest so people have jobs.
Perhaps the sharpest exchange of the evening took place between Jerry Brown and Bill Clinton over the governor's civil rights record in his home state of Arkansas.
Bill, you've had 11 years to get through a civil rights act, and you're here trying to appeal to African Americans and Hispanics, and I want to see where your civil rights program is.
Chill out. Okay. You're from California. Chill out. Cool off. Nobody has a better civil rights record than I do, and you know it.
There was some Bush bashing as well, which is exactly what Patrick Buchanan has been doing in the Republican primaries. The conservative commentator hasn't won a contest yet, but he's been getting many more votes than the president would like to see. So many, in fact, that Buchanan had a suggestion for the chief executive.
I think that President Bush should begin to give consideration to standing down as a candidate for renomination for the Republican Party for President of the United States.
The White House news secretary called the idea right out of Looney Tunes. And on the stump, Mr. Bush said that being president means more than just saying what's politically popular.
The presidency is not a popularity contest. I think you elect a president to say what America needs, to hear even when it's not what people want to hear. In the campaign, you hear all kinds of quick fixes, all kinds of political rhetoric. But a president must make decisions and lead.
Mr. Bush's tone has gotten sharper, but as ABC's Kathleen Dolasky tells us, not too sharp.
The president has been attacking what he believes to be Buchanan's positions at each campaign stop, denouncing protectionism and what he called the politics of hate. But the White House press secretary says the president will not take Buchanan on directly. Marlon Fitzwater says, quote, "We want those conservatives to be with us in November."
The president did give Buchanan's campaign some political fodder when he said he now regrets having broken his no new taxes pledge by compromising with the Democrats to get a deficit-cutting package in 1990. The economy has given Buchanan and the Democrats plenty of opportunity to snipe at the president, although there are more signs that the much-awaited recovery is really happening. Take February sales among the nation's largest retail chains. Consumers are still cautious, says analyst Walter Loeb, but they are buying.
The consumer is scooping up value items and is buying just those things that they need. The necessities are selling.
But for one chain, Macy's, more cuts as it reorganizes under the bankruptcy laws. ABC's Richard Davies spells them out.
Five iMagnon department stores and more than 50 specialty outlets will be closed. Analysts say they expect Macy's will close or sell more of its stores this year. The company's very large debt burden and weak sales force Macy's to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in January.
Ma Bell is the latest big company to announce job cuts. AT&T saying it will replace up to one-third of its 18,000 live long-distance operators with high-tech equipment. 9,200,000 people were without jobs in February, reflecting last month's 7.3% unemployment rate, the highest in 6.5 years.
It's a little scary. I have some leads on jobs, but as far as if I had to go out in the cold market, I don't know, it'd be very frightening, I think.
Frightening as it might be for that woman and others like her, the chief economist for Morgan Stanley, Stephen Roach, says.
It's a classic pattern that we've seen at the end of most recessions where the unemployment rate still continues to inch up, but on the production side of the equation, workers work longer and get paid more for it. That's what usually sows the seeds of the ensuing revival, and it doesn't feel good in those first few months, but usually there's a silver lining to those dark clouds.
Examples of that silver lining, January's rise in factory orders, Nissan's announcement that it will buy auto parts from twice as many U.S. suppliers as it did in 1991, and the biggest jump in the government's list of leading economic indicators since last July. Encouraging news, too, for California farmers. Recent heavy rains have allowed Washington to restore some of the federal water supply it said it could not provide because of the long drought. Gary Henderson, who grows almonds, wishes it could be more.
That I was hoping that maybe they would come up with 50% where we might be able to survive, but there's going to be decreased production and increased costs.
There are high costs to putting the old Soviet economy back on track. New food aid is going to the three Baltic states. Agriculture Secretary Edward Madigan says it'll cost an additional $5 million.
While Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia restructure their economies, USDA recognizes the need for imports of agriculture commodities, which are normally in surplus in this country.
The cost of peace may be high, but it is less than the cost of war. That was Secretary of State Baker's argument, as he told a Senate committee about the U.S. share of the U.N.'s peacekeeping costs around the world.
We spent trillions of dollars fighting the Cold War and winning it, and we ought to be willing, as I've said before, to spend millions and perhaps even billions to win the peace, because if we don't, we may find ourselves looking at the prospect of having once again to spend trillions.
Congress is mindful of how tight things are for people here, and just how much it will be willing to allocate abroad will be a matter for debate in the months ahead. The Irish Supreme Court has laid the groundwork for intensified debate on the abortion issue in Ireland by its latest ruling. The justices explained last week's decision to allow a 14-year-old who said she'd been raped to go to England for an abortion by saying they were afraid she'd kill herself if they refused. While the teenager has had the abortion, ABC's Mike Lee says the ruling was not quite as sweeping as abortion rights advocates had hoped.
The court sidestepped the larger issues, ruled on a very narrow issue, saying that because the girl had threatened to commit suicide, the right to her life had to be balanced against the right of the life to the unborn child. And given what they felt was a certitude of her taking her own life, the only way to save her was to allow her to have an abortion. What they did not address themselves to was the freedom of travel, which was a big issue in Ireland, nor to the larger and wider issue of liberalizing the abortion laws.
What the ruling has brought is pressure on the government of Prime Minister Albert Reynolds to bring the law into line with the court decision. In this country, the end to a strange case of doctor-patient relationship. ABC's Beverly Lumpkin was in the courtroom in Alexandria, Virginia.
Everyone in the courtroom held their breath as the judge's clerk read the word guilty 52 times, thus ending one of the most bizarre cases ever tried in a federal courtroom. Cecil Jacobson was convicted of having perpetrated what one witness called a purposeful pattern of deceit to defraud his patients. Some who thought they were participating in an anonymous donor insemination program actually received the doctor's own sperm. The jurors found he fathered at least 15 of his patients' children. He also tricked women into thinking they were pregnant by giving them massive doses of hormones. Later, he would tell them they had miscarried and the fetuses had reabsorbed.
Reaction from Dr. Jacobson?
Well, I'm obviously in shock. I had total reliance and still do on the justice system of the country.
Dr. Jacobson could be fined as much as $500,000 and be sent to prison for up to 280 years when he appears for sentencing on May 8th. In Houston, a judge has approved an agreement that would allow a convicted sex offender to be surgically castrated rather than serve jail time for raping a 13-year-old girl. Doctors involved in the treatment of sex offenders and advocates of victims' rights criticized the agreement as a simplistic way to deal with a complicated problem. Sexual harassment or not? Whichever, the issue has caused Democrat Brock Adams of Washington to give up a bid for his reelection.
It is not worth it to continue this campaign because of what it does to my family, myself, my supporters, my superb staff, and therefore I will not continue the campaign for the United States Senate.
Adams acted following allegations by 8 women that the senator had made inappropriate sexual advances. The women's charges were reported in the Seattle Times. The names of the women were not published, and the article said none of them had taken their charges to the police. The allegations are similar to those made publicly by Carrie Tupper, a Capitol Hill employee who did take her charges to Washington, D.C. police in 1987. The U.S. Attorney for the district ruled those charges without merit, and he did not press charges. Women on Senator Adams' staff, such as Susan Asbury, are shocked by the allegations.
He was a wonderful boss. He led us on very challenging issues, gave us a lot of room to do what we wanted to do, and make sure that we were complimented for the work that we had done. And this sexual harassment stuff, I never saw any hint of it.
Adams' current term expires next January, and his constituents seem agreed on one point. He should either quit now or vigorously defend his reputation. So far, Adams has indicated he will do neither. Meantime, the House is dealing with another scandal. This one involves how members, past and present, bounce checks drawn on their House bank accounts. The House Ethics Committee has proposed naming 19 current members and 5 former ones who were the most serious violators. Several Republicans, including Ohio's John Boehner, think that's a whitewash.
The good news is that the committee did, in fact, do something, and that is they found 24 members who they believe really did violate the rules. The bad news is that you could bounce up to 800 checks and still not make the list.
Name them all, adds Pennsylvania's Rick Santorum.
What we're seeing here is an attempt to protect as many members of Congress as possible. It's the old boy system. The leadership of the Congress has put the pressure on the chairman of the Ethics Committee to try to withhold as many names as possible, to keep the damage control as little as possible, and that's exactly what we've seen here.
Arizona's John Kyle says the folks back home are going to want to know a lot more.
I can't defend it to my constituents. I don't think the American people will buy it, and I don't think that it enhances the credibility of the House for us to define that kind of a standard and say that we have done our job.
The full House votes on the partial disclosure recommendation this coming week. After that, those named will be given a chance to dispute the findings before the Ethics Committee. As for the United Way scandal involving the high-flying ways of a charity organization's former president, William Aramone, United Way reports that local affiliate pledges and payments are down 21% from last year. United Way has also elected a new interim president, Kenneth Dam, who will serve without pay until a permanent replacement for Aramone can be found. The long-awaited trial involving 4 white police officers seen beating a black motorist in Los Angeles in that now celebrated home videotape has gotten underway in California. Terry White is prosecuting the case.
This evidence will show that whatever Rodney King was, or whatever he did, it did not justify what you saw on that videotape.
The senior officer among the accused, Sergeant Stacy Kuhn, is anxious for his side of the story to be told.
I've dreamed about this day. I've thought about this day for a long time. It's finally here. It's kind of like an anticlimax. You're not even sure it's here, but you kind of, it's here, so I'm glad.
Michael Stone, one of the defense lawyers, also looks forward to making his case.
What the jury will come away with is an impression that Mr. King was not the compliant, cooperative, reasonable arrestee who just got mugged by a gang of thug policemen. That's what we expect to show.
While 4 officers stand accused, as ABC's Jane Platt tells us, their defense is not united.
There seems to be a split in the defense. Attorney John Barnett says the videotape shows his client, Officer Ted Briseño, was trying to stop the other officers who he felt were out of control, swinging their batons wildly. And Barnett says it may look as though Briseño was kicking Rodney King, but he was actually trying to keep him on the ground while protecting himself from the swinging batons. Defense attorneys for the 3 other officers say their clients were not out of control. They were following approved LAPD procedures for subduing suspects who resist arrest. Jane Platt, ABC News, Simi Valley, California.
Sandy Dennis died last Monday. She had won Tony Awards for her roles in 1,000 Clowns and Any Wednesday on Broadway, and an Oscar for her portrayal of a whimpering wife in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Sandy Dennis had fought ovarian cancer for more than 2 years. She was 54. No pain, no gain. You hear that among people who work out. But when it comes to the pain people feel after an operation, Assistant Health Secretary James Mason says there's no gain in letting people suffer.
Roughly half of the millions of patients treated in the conventional manner for pain following surgery are under-medicated and experience unacceptable levels of pain.
Dr. Mason was joined by Health Secretary Louis Sullivan in recommending that doctors not shy away from using strong painkillers, including morphine.
Our object is not only to reduce pain, but also to educate patients about the need to communicate unrelieved pain so that they can receive prompt evaluation and treatment.
Which ABC's John Bascom tells us is beneficial in more ways than one.
One side benefit of giving a patient more painkiller is that he or she can get up and move around, and that means less chance of blood clots or pneumonia. In fact, the guidelines hint that more painkiller might actually shorten the hospital stay.
Bottom line, post-operative pain doesn't build character. It just hurts. Michelangelo, the computer virus. Not the Ninja Turtle dropped by last Friday.
It installs itself in the computer memory and it stays there. And then when something it's interested in happens, it jumps into action. Second thing it does is it hides itself somewhere permanently in the computer so that thereafter, every time you run the computer, the virus gets to run.
Robert Jacobson is with a company that fights viruses, such as Michelangelo.
It will format the system hard disk by overwriting it with random characters. Nice. So everything you've got stored on that hard disk in your computer, poof, it's gone.
Warnings about the virus called Michelangelo because it was designed to strike on the 517th anniversary of the artist's birth caused an international panic and led thousands of users to seek programs to kill the virus. Apparently, people reacted quickly and effectively enough because the virus caused little more than a sniffle among the hard disk set. One exception was in South Africa, where more than 1,000 PCs used by the country's pharmacists crashed. Now the search is on for whomever's responsible for creating Michelangelo. That virus is by no means the only one around, and ABC's Jim Slade says the virus breeders are a lot like graffiti artists.
Computer specialists say the virus writers are usually young, about 14 to 24, loners, more comfortable with machines than people, who think what they're doing is a big laugh. Some do not appear to understand how much damage they're doing, having no experience with the business world, and they're prolific. One is known to produce a virus every other week at least.
Turning fat into lean. When World News This Week continues in a moment.
This is a story about American heroes. They changed quite a few lives last year. Jorge Vasquez put out fires. But no, he's not a firefighter. Philip Dale discovered several new stars. Oh, he's not an astronomer. And Elaine Capobianco. She saved a child from drowning. But she's not a lifeguard. They're teachers. But to the kids they've reached, they're heroes.
I'm a teacher. The children are the heroes.
We're not just teaching subject matter. We're teaching human beings.
I am tough as nails, but they know that I love them.
I mean, we've got a legacy that follows behind us forever.
Teachers have the power to make an impact on our future. Reach for that power. Teach. Find out how by calling 1-800-45-TEACH. Be a teacher. Be a hero. 1-800-45-TEACH.
A public service message brought to you by Recruiting New Teachers, the Ad Council, and this station.
The excesses of Fat Tuesday are over for another year. The annual Shrove Tuesday pancake race between the women of liberal Kansas and Olney, England, went to the Americans this year, tying that series at 21-all. Carnival was its usual boisterous self in Rio, and the Germans farshed themselves silly. In the Big Easy, thousands flocked to the French Quarter and elsewhere as New Orleans put on its annual show.
This year the crowd seemed to be bigger, more happy, more joyous, more happening, more drunk, more everything.
Including the bizarre.
We walked past a woman, and one of the other guys in our group said, "Hey, she's got a snake." And we turned around, and sure enough, she had about a 15-foot boa constrictor wrapped around her neck and was just kind of holding it, presenting it to everybody.
And at the stroke of 12, or reasonable facsimile, the revelers melted into the night, and the street cleaners moved in. And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin. Engineering by Gary Jeffries and Ken Trong. I'm Sean Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.